All right, this is episode 40 of the Slide In Podcast.
Uncomfortably close.
That'll be the title of today's episode.
He's rubbing my leg.
Oh, nice. I'm glad I can't see it.
How do you like this? Oh, shit in your way. Sorry, huh?
No, it's fine. I'll take them off your hands.
It's like you're not a guest anymore. You're like one of the staff, so just like treating you badly.
We've got a couple of new folks with us. Well,
what?
Howard, people know Howard. Howard's been in a couple of our podcasts now, working on some fishing shows with Howard right now. And we have Alistair.
Yep.
What's your last name?
Dundee.
Cool.
Dundee. Not Dundee.
We've got Al, the Scotsman.
Joe. Back.
I got it right. Billy asked me where he was from. I got it right. That's proud of me.
Impressive.
Don't lean forward and impale yourself.
These two were out with us in, was that April?
April and February, wasn't it?
February, April.
Okay.
Now.
Yeah. So they've been around, they've been here for what, a month now? Something like that.
Six weeks.
Right.
A couple of weeks.
So pretty familiar with the area.
Yeah.
They're pretty familiar before they got here.
Yeah.
How many trips you been here?
This is for me, 20 maybe.
Yeah.
Altogether.
Arguably more familiar than me.
I was going to say, if you put that together, it's probably more than most people around here fish, though.
Yes.
Could be.
So we've got a bunch of great questions to get into tonight. A couple of housekeeping things we want to start with. Wretched Mess Festival, September 5th and 6th. Kelly's tying Friday. We're doing the live podcast. And it sounds like Kyler might be tying now.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I don't have to?
No, I think you still have to. I don't know. Kyler might be as well. Kyler's a young dude, works for us, super fishy. Frustratingly fishy, I would say.
Ridiculously good.
Being that I fish with him. Yeah, he got a great fish on the mouse the other night. I got nothing, just kind of how it goes. It does suck to suck. Yeah. Who said that?
I did.
And then
this is your future.
What's his name from Cortland's coming? Richard. Richard's
Friday.
Coming the
Friday.
15th and 16th. Right? Did I make that up? I might have made that up.
Yes.
I'll edit that.
It'll be fun.
All right, let's jump into it. I was talking to Al before the show, and he said that I should ask Howard about his very first permit.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, thanks for that.
Permit.
All right, I know Howard's mic sucks right now. We bought cheap mics so we could record four at a time so we could do podcasts like this. They suck, but it gets better, I swear.
I thought you said permanent.
And then permanent.
Oh, yes. Your hair curling.
I can't speak, sorry.
Oh, he's for
it was textbook.
Textbook. Almost.
Absolute textbook.
Textbook.
You've never seen anything as professional in your life.
Give him the whole story, though.
So I was hammered.
Why do all these stories start with hammered?
I'd been very hammered the night before. I'd have an hour's sleep. I got back into the accommodations in Venezuela. I got back into our accommodation by piling outdoor furniture into a pyramid. And I climbed up it and I crawled across the roof.
The clay tile roof.
Broke all the tiles and dropped down into the courtyard.
Are you sure you weren't hardy to hear this?
Yeah, it wasn't a work deal, so it was fine. I probably haven't got a job now. So and I managed to get an hour's sleep and then we went permit fishing. And I slept in the bottom of the boat until we saw one and jumped out, waded it down. It was like blowing like 30. It was three fish, all tailing, big deep flat, you know. Got the middle one to eat, shot off straight across the flat, the whole thing, chased after it. Went down into the channel, so they brought the panga around and said, you'll have to get in the boat, we'll have to chase it. You can't get across the channel. So I'm on the front. Sort of like winding, you know, trying to keep tight and everything, and just moonwalked straight off the front into about 10 feet to about 10 feet of water and went under the boat. So I came up at the back of the boat. I had to pass him the rod, unfortunately, so he claims it's 50% his fish.
It definitely is.
Climbed back in the boat.
Yeah. It's got to be a rule.
Yeah. Climbed back in the boat, chased it, landed it two flats over. But that was it. That was the first one. And it
good
was...
job, Al.
I took the fight out of the fish for him, so I did the hard work.
And I've still never caught one bigger. It was absolutely enormous.
How big is that fish?
It was heading for 30. Yeah, nice. 30 pounds.
Big fish.
Yeah, and it took me 13 years to catch it. 13 years of permit fishing before I actually caught one.
I've caught two.
Well, things right, just...
One was like that, and it was probably like that too.
That's not woefully different than the first the only permit I've ever caught. Took me a really long time. Took me 4 days. There was so much luck involved with
did
this
he catch
fish.
It swinging?
Yeah. Sort of spay rod in the flats. No, I met a nice Canadian gal down in Cuba and was light on sleep. Stopped at the bar on the way out to the boat at 6 a.m. and chugged a couple beers to try to get even. Slept on the boat on the way out to the flat. And then, I made a absolute luckiest cast of my life. I slapped the water on the way forward, slapped the water on the way back. I yelled fuck and hauled through it, and it landed on its head, and he blew it up like a brown trout would.
That's how you catch them.
Yeah, there's so much. I mean, there's so much luck involved. And then the next one I threw at, you know, followed it all the way to the boat and gave me the middle finger like they, I think, traditionally do.
Yeah. I looked at that for about 12 years.
When Brian and I were down at the lodge, Brian had just fish coming around, and he'd be him up in the front, and they just come threes at a time, twos, threes, makes a great cast on one, thing turns off, and I said to Ricardo, what happened? He goes, oh, being a permit man. I said, that's it? He goes, that's all you need to know. They're just being permit.
Yeah. So our guide down there spoke almost no English at all. All he knew was fishing terms, and the one he kept saying was, he goes, shh, permit very spook. Didn't want us walking around or anything, but yeah, it was great.
Half the big permit stories I know of is I blew a cast and piled it, and it hit 20 feet from it and ran over and got it.
Ran over, yeah. It. Yeah. Well, that...
Every perfect cast I've ever seen has just got...
They're not honest. No. That's the old adage. They're just not an honest fish, particularly.
No. Well, that week we were there, one of the guys who was staying at the same hotel, he got a 40-pound permit blind casting into a blue hole with a Clouserman on.
Yeah, it doesn't count.
And he knew that. He's like he's a Spanish guy, and he's like luck. Yeah, great. All right, why don't we give everybody a little background about who Al is, because I imagine those watching. Yeah, Al, you want to give us a little, maybe Howard, you want to?
I think you should let me do it.
Okay. Oh. Yeah. Why don't you give us
are
a little background
start with
on
the cellmates part?
No, it's, yeah, you know, that was a short period in his history. But, you know, Al's a certified mole catcher from the Lowlands of Scotland. That is what his original qualifications are in.
Is that a real thing?
Yeah.
Actually qualified in mole catching. To hunt moles?
Yeah.
Catch them with your hands?
No, you to poison them, basically.
Okay.
Control them.
Permanent catching.
Yeah.
There's no Similar. Release.
Yeah, and then from there he moved into airport security, briefly. You were a farmer for a while, weren't you?
Well, as soon as I left school, my whole family farms in Scotland. Both sides really have sort of farming background, so I did that for like 10 years.
Yeah. Nice. It's all really relevant for working in the fish and tackle industry.
It is.
and then we ended up working, how I met Al was we ended up working in a fly shop together.
30 something years ago.
Where was that?
That was in the northwest of England, a place called Penrith, a shop called John Norris. It was like an old family fly shop, cool place.
Probably one of the biggest in
biggest,
UK.
One of the biggest in the country.
Yeah. Yeah, a big
the
shop.
The magazine that I get.
Yeah.
The fly fishing and tying.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. It's now owned by a guy called James Norris, a good friend of mine. We used to work for his dad. That's how old we are. But yeah, we worked there, and then I left and went to Hardy's, and after I'd been there for 4 years, and then there was an opportunity came up at Hardy's to bring Al in, and so Al came over, and
nice.
We've been there ever since, like a life sentence.
It's been a while.
20 years.
I'm trying to remember the expression. I think Jake was telling me about how he described you in relation to Howard as like the keeper of the light or something.
I don't know if that's good or bad. Yeah. I don't know what that means. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what it was.
I'm probably putting words in his
bold definitely needs changes.
So how long have you been working for Hardy now, Al?
20 something, 21, 22, 20
for you. Translation, somewhere I heard that was 7 years ago, they were, when he was talking. Did you hear that?
No.
He said something about 7 years ago.
There is a small language barrier here. So, you haven't
understood. I was trying to figure out, I was like, he's only 7 years, I thought it was 20 some years.
No. We worked in the fly shop for nearly 7 years.
7 years in the fly shop.
Yeah, and then
20 years at
20. 20 here.
Okay, I think I kind of heard that as 7 years ago in the fly shop.
But also worked in three separate fly shops altogether. Worked in John Norris in Penrith, another one down Lancashire in England, and one up in Scotland as well before I went to Harvey's.
I don't know why or what, but when I come over there, I'm going to Lancashire. What is it? Lancaster?
Lancaster.
I hear that Lancaster. All the time. You guys always say that.
Or is it Lancashire?
Lancashire.
Lancashire,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. What is it?
It's just a region in England, in the north of England.
I hear it constantly. People act, when they're talking to me, act like I should know where it is. Yeah. Well, I could pick out England on the map. Maybe.
It's over there.
Yeah, it's that way.
Yeah.
I'll get it all down, though.
Let's jump into some questions.
I hope these are broad so they can answer them.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
I can watch.
I found out.
I'm still shell shocked and get my ass chewed from your buddy.
Who chewed his ass?
Chewed my ass about overriding Howard the whole time.
He retracted it though.
Oh
yeah, the guy that wrote it and told me what an ass.
Oh, that guy. Yeah,
I'm still quivering.
Yeah. No, that guy was. His apology was very proper.
He's a very proper guy.
Yeah,
that was great.
and well deserved.
I'm
going to use AI and figure out what the words spoken in that original was.
The three times Howard talked. Yeah. Hello, goodbye. Yes.
All right, so this is a question from Jack Peters. He says, hey guys at the slide. I think he knew you guys were going to be here. He's including you in that. Love the podcast. My dad and I watch it every Tuesday when it comes out. Dad and I stopped by the shop a few weeks ago, all the way from Pennsylvania, and mentioned to Kelly that I started a fly fishing club at my high school. He said something along the lines of, I'm glad to see those are coming back. My question stems from this as I wonder, is fly fishing a dying sport? As in, does average fly fishermen get older every year since younger generations are not getting involved as much? For me, as a younger fly fisherman, that is hard, sorry guys, I can't read. He says, basically it's hard to find people to fish with. It seems like nowadays that it is hard to get people my age just to get outside. I'd like to hear Kelly's thoughts as more experienced man in the fly fishing world, as well as Braden's thoughts as still being young in the fly world. Thank you very much. I look forward to continuing to watch the podcast. And I'd love to also hear Howard and Hal's thoughts. So anybody want to start on that one? Is fly fishing a dying sport?
Let's go to your side of the pond.
Well, I think for the UK anyway, the answer is yes, really. Okay. I think there's a lot more older generation than there is new generation coming in. Do you not agree?
Yes and no. I think what I see in our region quite a lot is that the people who do get into it, we do have some kids getting into it, tend to be really avid, and they tend to stick with it. You know, I know a few kids now who are getting to like that in the danger zone where they're discovering, you know, other attractions, you know, like
golf,
beer and not golf, you know, women and stuff like that, and they're still sticking with it. So I think we, in the Northeast in particular where we live now, I think the kids that do get into it tend to stick at it. There isn't enough of them. That's a fact. But I don't think all's lost. In all honesty, I think, you know, I am still seeing a percentage of kids get into it, but it's not enough. Mm-hmm. It's not enough. There needs to be more. Mm-hmm. I think.
I don't think it's as dire. I think we've had a lot of, it became a lifestyle. But we're kind of in a unique area where people come from all over the world to go to school here and live in Montana. But I've seen it, and as much as I hate to say it, Euro nymphing, I saw it happen. I've seen three spikes. One was that movie, which was a very fake spike, and it had nothing to do with young people. But it blew up that yuppie thing.
Talking about a river runs through it, for those who may not be familiar.
Yeah, not my first video. Yeah, but that was a big spike. And then I figured out in a minute. That was a big spike. And then the streamers thing, that really spiked young anglers. And a lot. I mean, you saw, to the point of there was an article written about the generation gap, and four of us did it, and they showed this old English looking, it was sparse gray hackle, and he's in his tweed and his pipe and his, you know, ascot and the whole shit, and then there's some kid walking up the river like this in shorts with a beer in his hand and a giant streamer on, and he's just wrecking everybody's world. I didn't like the photo, but I saw it, and then Euro nymphing brought a shit ton of people to it. And the beauty of Euro, as much trash as I talk about it, it's gratification, and you catch fish, and it ain't like the old days when you learned hatches and you sat and you watched and you bug sampled and you did all the shit that we grew up doing. And then it became exciting. But for us on this side of the pond, it's a very, you know, you watch it's kind of not as much as it used to be, I don't think, but still a ton. There'll be somebody, it's a truck commercial or a lifestyle commercial, somebody will be fly fishing. It has become mainstream.
People are aware of it.
They're very aware of it, and their kids, and it's a cool thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's up there with go skiing, and they come here in the summer,
it's this outdoor lifestyle.
Yeah, it's a lifestyle thing, and it's synonymous with that lifestyle. So, I don't know if it's as much to do with any one of those. And if I had to direct it, I would say it was probably from that stupid movie, which is a great movie. I shouldn't say it. It was just about such an onslaught of dumbasses that, you know, it was the greatest thing, moneymaker in the world. But they didn't stick.
Yeah.
But the ones who did, kids, I think, and ones who did were the same people that are is everything out here. They're hikers, bikers, skiers, fishers.
Yeah.
You know, and when they're fishers, they're fly fishers.
Yeah.
And they seem to already understand that. Have an ego this big. The day they start, we have a huge ego.
We were talking about it before you came in here, Kelly. He was late, as is tradition.
It's not late. Was I?
I don't know. Like,
we were technically late.
3 minutes.
We were supposed to meet him at 5 to fish, and we were in here drinking
beer with
him.
No, we were not supposed to meet at 5. We were supposed to meet at 2. I mean, I have the text. I walked around like a jolted freaking prom queen in my house for 2 hours. I said, fuck it, I'm going fishing without him.
We thought you were still in town. We didn't understand you. I said to Braden,
gotta speak proper English.
We didn't understand your text message. It really didn't make a right lot of sense, I have to be honest. But
yours didn't either.
Sorry, I threw us off there for a minute. Let's get back. So what we were talking about, regardless of what? So we were talking about, you know, is when Howard was first here, he basically said, I sat down ready to just get reamed for Euro nymphing for an hour and a half. And I basically said, you know, my problem with it is that it's the people that only do that and then just talk about that. And what did you say, Howard?
And you can catch fish Euro nymphing. Doing it badly.
Yeah, that's exactly.
You can do it badly and you can still catch a ton of fish. Doing it well is as skillful as anything else. And, you know.
Totally agree.
Unfortunately, some people don't progress past it. But I think the one thing it does do is it's probably a little bit of a gateway. Even if only a percentage of people then go on to become, you know, more rounded fly fisher and do it all. Yeah, it's a good thing.
Didn't we? We had that in our first or our second one.
We talked about that.
Yeah. I mean, there's more out there. I brought up that I've seen, I'm seeing them. We talked about it last time, where they're saying they want to try this dry fly thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, is that how you say it?
Look,
dry fly thing.
I'm in this the same boat. It's a little different boat, but it's a similar boat in that I kind of, like you said, right? The waves, right? There's the movie and then the streamer thing. Well, I am a streamer guy. That's mm-hmm. That was what brought me to fly fishing. I mean, I grew up.
The other thing that ruined all fly fishing?
Yes. I mean, I grew
first
up.
First, it was Howard, though.
I grew up throwing dry flies in little creeks, and like I was primed to be a serious angler from a young age, but I didn't like it. It never really grabbed me. I mean, my dad, you know, we'd go up to my mom's parents' cabin, and after about 30 minutes, my dad's like, well, in-laws, right? I'm going to go fishing. It's like, you want to come? And I'm like, I'd rather do anything than go up there with you. Where you're going to leave me alone in a bear-infested cold creek with fly boots that are seven sizes too big. But then the streamer thing, you know, when I eventually got into that, like, that's what grabbed me and kind of brought me in. And then I figured out there's more than just that. Actually, I'm not sure.
Brian's always said that he thought that saved fly fishing. I don't think I'd go that far, but it sure brought a lot of the different age group.
Mm.
That was what
it
really did.
It made it cool.
Streamer fishing was fast. It wasn't.
It's ADD
positive. Yeah, you go, you go, you go.
Yeah.
And Euro was the same thing.
Just invigorates things a little bit.
Yeah.
That's, you know. And then one of it's like, and then the Euro thing shows up and it's like, you're catching fish.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I think they were both spectacular for the business.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, and we were talking about it before we came in here. That, I mean, I truly think video games are the death of man. I mean, it's inside world. It's all fake, whatever. Yeah, you can make friends doing it.
TikTok's not real.
Yeah, wait, what? Will you call Jerry? No, so, I mean, all that stuff, like, it's very dystopian, whatever. Everyone does it. I look at Instagram a lot. I don't have TikTok, so I can claim I'm better than people, but I see the same shit on Instagram a couple days later.
Yeah.
But I mean, we were talking about it in here. Going back to Jack's question, we see a lot of young people in this fly shop. I mean, we see a lot of 70-year-olds. We see a lot of kind of every age demographic, but
we see a lot of guys your age.
We see a lot. Younger. A lot of, I said earlier, 17 to 25?
Yeah.
A lot of MSU kids, right? But there's...
And a lot of Salt Lake kids.
And I've been trying to stop in more fly shops recently, just try to make an effort to go see what other people are doing. And I've seen a ton of kids working in fly shops that are that 17 to, you know, whatever, 25. So I think here specifically, I've never really paid attention to fishing when I've been abroad. But it feels like there is this, you know, and I really think Euronymphing and streamer fishing has helped kind of bring that younger generation in.
But what I find also interesting in that thing was that the number of trout spay cats showed that are young. That was like when Joe and those guys had the trout spay days, the first one.
Yeah.
And if you saw the picture, they're all your age, every one of them. Which means very few people that's us. You don't start. You had a gateway into that thing. There was something that got you.
Yeah.
And they were a lot. And I mean, there was a lot.
Yeah. Back home, it's the other way. So two-handed. Any kind of space, typically much older. Generally speaking, a much older demographic.
It was non-existent in the U.S. really until trout spay showed up.
Yeah.
There was a handful of the West Coast guys, people that go. Michigan
Ed
had a
Ward
big.
Ed was a big influence on me personally.
Yeah. Ed and Howell and those guys and
Joe Roeder from Reds. I watch a lot of their. I mean, I come from the Yakima River, but he does great trout spay stuff.
Oh, he does great. Yeah. I like his video.
Trout spay is not even a thing at home, really.
Yeah,
it's just salmon and sea trout.
When that showed up, there was virtually. I mean, those guys weren't really young when they. Well, they were when they started, you know, because they're my age. Yeah. Little. Well, no, they might be about the same, I guess. But they. It was still a steelhead thing, but when that trout spay thing showed up, I saw it everywhere. I mean, it was, again, it's like, single-handers are like, oh, fuck, you know, them grumpy old pricks. It's like, it just brings more, What I liked about trout spay, in particular, not spay so much because it was before spay's before Skagit and all that stuff.
Right? Yeah.
When it came, everybody figured out what grainage meant, and all of a sudden you're talking to people about fly lines, and they're talking what they should be talking. They're not. Nobody's saying
it's not a six weight.
Yeah. What?
It's 185 grains.
Yeah. And it's like that, but there was this. There just seemed to be awareness where people were stepping. They weren't just spay. They weren't trout spay. There should be a different trout spay. I guess should be its word, but they weren't just that. They also dry fly fished, and they also nymph and streamer fished. And you see these people that do everything, which there's nothing wrong. That's great. That's what my whole life since I wrote my first article in Fly Fisherman. I don't even know what year it was. It was a long time ago. It was in the 80s and early. And the mantra has always been, how do we get youth into our sport? Mm. And, you know, when John Randolph was at our fly fishing, we had meetings here for 5 years. And that was one of our things is that how do you get youth into the sport? I would say, well, quit having them 80-year-old bastards write every article. You know, get
crotchety old.
I used to tell them all the time, go to PA, go to Michigan, go to the Beaverhead, come to the Madison, and find some 18-year-old guide. He'll be better than any of those old guys that you're. They've read everything we've done. They know everything. They're good. And they won't write. I says, well, how could they? I mean, they got to get a break. Go find them.
Johnson.
Go send somebody out on a. It was the same thing with the youth team. It's like, go to the places where it's hotbeds. You know, get out of certain zones and go to the hotbed zones and see. There's kids out there. Now, and as much as I hate to say it, I think the freaking phones or the phones and all that shit, that is massive here.
Yeah.
It is such a draw for kids on, I mean,
that's what
you
I'm
don't
saying.
See any really dorks on that thing as far as, I mean,
they're dorks, but it's pretty obvious when they are
dorks.
Yeah,
but I mean, that's every sport in the world. But when you see somebody, and there's a lot of kids like Hunter's age.
Yeah.
That guy I couldn't find that was doing the thing on streamer, on the Instagram, incredibly well done.
There's a whole Bozeman mafia of dudes, and like I've fished with a couple of them, just kind of met them organically through the fly shop, and I've ended up fishing with them, and I'm like, oh, do you know so-and-so? They're like, yeah, I met him on Instagram. We fish all the time, and... Going back to Jack's question, I think if you are a young person in the sport, like Instagram is a tool. I mean, it is dystopian and it can ruin you, but like it can also be a tool to meet people. Mm-hmm. When, you know, me personally, I fished with Matt back in Seattle, who now works for us. Outside of Matt, I didn't know a single person that fly fished besides my dad. Like my dad doesn't know anybody that fly fishes in Seattle. Mm-hmm.
And there's a bajillion Seattle fly fishers.
I know. Well, there's a million people there. And so,
was his question about something about schools in Michigan? Was it the beginning of his question? He said clubs or something.
He started I don't know where he's. No, he's from Pennsylvania.
Oh, PA.
But he started a fly fishing club at his school.
And that's pretty. That's getting more and more and more.
Yeah.
That group from Northview. In Grand Rapids, they had a huge group. They were here 10 years ago, I think. Maybe more Rich. I can call them and find out. And it's just really cool. I said, you got a club. There's 18, 20 kids showed up, and they're here for a week or more, 10 days. You're going to the park, you're going to Idaho, they're going here. It's like, whoa, bring it.
We've got a program in the UK. Charles Jardine runs it called Fishing for Schools.
Mm-hmm.
They do some stuff.
Cool.
They're getting a few kids into it, which helps. And we had a guy in the Northeast where we live now. Used to be a school teacher. He had a kids club called, it was called Bob Smith. He's still around. He actually worked for us for a while. And some of the kids that he got into fly fishing through his school program, one of them's in the world team.
Yeah.
So he'll be over here in, you know, so it definitely helps if you can, you know, and that's why France, Spain, the Czech Republic have got such strong going to a competition fishing thing, they've got such strong adult teams, is because they've got a really, really strong youth setup. They pull them in and they indoctrinate them when they're young and get them really, you know, really high level when they're kids.
Right.
And they just end up being, you know, exceptional anglers.
So, not to jump off questions, We've covered this.
I have one more thing I wanted to add on that.
Gordon.
That kind of helps bring folks in. I was just over to catch him for Eric and Chris's wedding. I told basically everybody what I do, and maybe we have one new listener from the 300 people I talked to. So if you're listening, thank you. But Chris, the groom, wanted me to take him and some friends fishing, I think 2 days after the wedding. We're hanging around over there. So I took him out, and Chris had been on one fishing trip before. And one of his good friends, I became good friends with, super fishy tire, hog tide flies, Nick Clement. Great dude. Yeah, he's won some of our stuff before. So we took him out, and Chris is explaining to his friends who have never fished before. He goes, guys, fishing is like gambling. When you catch a fish, it feels just like winning a big hand in blackjack. And his friends are like, oh, okay, cool. Now I get why people do this. Like, you know, as stupid as that is, I think it's a great way to, you know, somebody who's never fished, like, you need to phrase things the right way and give them a positive experience. And he spoke their language, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, yeah, I know exactly what that feels like. You know, when your nine-leg parlay hits.
Yeah.
Like, then that's what getting a big brown trout feels like.
Yeah. I think it's good. This guy's started a club. I think that's one of the main points, because then all your pals are doing it as well.
Yeah.
You know, you're not just going standing on the bank yourself trying to learn. You're going out with your mates and doing it.
And that's how most people in the old days learned.
Yeah.
I was really lucky, because Billy Robinson and I, because all the other knitting club, all those guys, Billy, none of those guys.
Knitting club's Kelly's group of friends from high school, middle school?
Yeah. There's 10 of us.
Yeah.
Basically been in contact every day of our lives.
It's a thousand text messages a day.
Cell phone showed up.
My Lord.
Oh my God. Just like, that's why I call them the knitting club. It's like, shit can be 200 deep by 8 o'clock in the morning. It's like, guys got to go back to work, dude. But Billy and I, he's the only other guy. And then Chet McLaughlin and I fished together, but we knew each other in high school. So there was three of us. And it's really it, right?
Yeah.
But at least you weren't the only guy, period.
And you really just need to find one good friend to do that with, who you enjoy fishing with. Yep. Matt was that guy for me. I mean, I quit playing golf to go fish. I golfed a lot before that, and then all of a sudden I went, I kind of like this other thing more.
It definitely helps if there's more than one of you, because you look normal.
Yeah.
You're walking around in a pair of waders and a strange thing strapped to your chest, waving some string around or whatever. You know?
Objectively, fly fishing is a pretty stupid thing.
That's the way to go. what was I just going to bring up? I don't know.
Sorry.
Oh, I wanted to carry on. Do we have any questions for Howard about competition or anything like that?
Yeah,
I got a general one.
Yeah, throw a general one at
him. I'm just, I didn't know that we're having the world show here. Like, it's in my freaking yard. I did not know. Next year.
Next
year. That's how. Imagine if this was in Spain. Every son of a bitch on earth would be like the fucking Olympics showing up, right?
Oh, yeah.
I find out the last time we were fishing that it's going to be here.
Yeah, worlds.
On Hebgen Lake. our yard.
Hebgen or Henry's?
Part of it's going to be on Hebgen.
In
the Madison Arm, I think.
Yeah. In the Madison Arm, and Henry's, and Henry's. How the hell?
Where was the press release?
Yeah, it was the world championships, right?
Keeping it quiet.
Somebody's got to figure this out, because it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it is for our business, you know, for the fly fishing business. It's the Olympics.
Yeah.
I mean, are you shitting me? And nobody knew it. So,
I mean, the U.S. Open's going to be at Pebble Beach in 3044. We know that.
We
already.
Know that. Yeah.
We know it's going to be here next year.
Next year in my yard. And so, talk me through the beats first, just real basic. What are the beats going to be?
Right. So
for those who don't know, beats where you're going to go fish.
Yeah. So it's not been released yet, but it's more than likely going to follow the same format that the youth and the ladies followed, because the youth and the ladies typically are the year before we come. Mm-hmm. So that's it allows logistical planning and all that. They can test.
Yeah,
the event with a smaller group before, you know, the main sort of.
And when they do show up, how many countries are?
There's no limit.
Well,
out of the eligible countries, but so it's normally somewhere between 25 and 35 maximum. It depends. Teams of five plus at least one reserve plus a manager plus some support mm-hmm. as well. So some of the teams could be eight, nine.
Ugandan citizenship, do you think I've got a shot?
No.
No. Okay. You're not allowed to use spare rods for a start. There's a limit on rod length. So you're out of it straight away.
Yeah, just sorry. Like your porn career.
yeah, maximum length requirement, minimum length requirement. Yeah, same deal. Yeah, sorry.
I don't even know where to go off that one.
No.
So, okay, and then...
So, yeah, so we're going to, at the minute, I think, we're going to fish Madison Arm on Hebgen. They're going to have one, I think, on Sheridan, mm-hmm. which is obviously a stocked venue. Mm-hmm.
And to that point, didn't you tell me a lot of the places are stocked venues?
No, so what they tend to do, they try to do a spread of mm-hmm. venues. Because obviously, if you have a spread of venues with varying challenges, you know, unstocked lake, stocked lake.
Okay, that's you know, kind of what I was getting. There's a stocked venue at most of them. It's not all wild.
Not at them all. Sometimes it's all wild.
Oh, okay.
But it's up to the horse nation. The horse nation picks the venues. Provided.
Did you hear what I heard? The horse nation.
The horse nation. I've been hanging around with him too long.
The host nation.
The host.
Okay, well, I'm just wondering if I'm the only one picking up on that.
Somebody's in their car right now going, fuck, I heard the same thing.
Yeah, probably. Sorry.
So that's all right. So it's up to the host nation.
They pick the venues. Mm-hmm. And they'll often pick them to, you know, to have, I'll not say an advantage, but sometimes it's to get an advantage. It's generally best if it's a spread so that there's lots of different challenges. Mm-hmm. So we're going on Madison Arm, Hebgen, Sheridan, and then it's on the Henry's Fork, I think in, is it Burr Gulch Canyon or something like that?
Could be.
Yeah, it's down in one of the canyons. And then I think we're on the Warm and the Grays, potentially, and all over in Idaho. And it's 5 days. You fish one venue per day. Every country gets broken up, you know, five anglers, five groups, you all rotate around. So most of the teams will be here for 2 weeks. Some of them will be here for longer. So you're looking at, it could be in the region of 200 people it brings in.
Cool.
You know, and then, you know, whoever else it brings in from.
So where's it going to culminate at the end? They have the big... thing I've seen in different, where's it going to be?
I think it's going to be in Idaho Falls.
Idaho Falls?
Yeah, cool. I think it's all sort of based out of there. So it's a good, I mean, there's a good opportunity, you know, to because we all have to have a controller and the horse nation, or the horse nation, has to provide the controllers.
So is this, you know, most anglers here are pretty privy to bass things where they'll have a big event, you know, there's the last day or first day or all 5 days or whatever, there's tents up and you meet the pros and yeah. stuff like that. Is there anything like that with the World Show?
Not generally. In some of the European countries, what they'll do is they'll have, like in a central hotel where we're all based out of, mm-hmm. there'll be, a fly shop will set up in there and, you know, so the competitors can buy essentials.
No, I was thinking more like, event, so but, if, you know... all my staff want to go down and meet everybody there and just to go witness some part of the gala event.
Yeah, there's an opening ceremony.
Like you get your medal award thing.
Yeah, we've got an opening ceremony, a closing ceremony.
Right.
And we also have there's usually a conservation symposium because so everything's catch and release mm-hmm. and the rules are really strict. Like, you know, if you inadvertently injure a fish or kill a fish, there's all sorts of stuff in the rules about, you know, the controller can say, right, you can't continue to fish like that because I deem what you're doing to be, mm-hmm. you know, damaging the fish, you know. But that never happens because the way we fish doesn't
right.
damage them any more than normal fly fishing because it's just, it is normal fly fishing.
Is anybody throwing two hot dungeons at them?
No, it's all, I mean, the rules on hook. We can't use half of the stuff that you guys throw over here. Even a foam hopper would be illegal for us. Mm-hmm. It's too big. You know, we've got hook limits and they've got to be...
kind of like the Jackson one fly.
Manufactured burbless and you can only have one bead visible and it can't be over 4 millimetres. You can't have, you know, fly body above a certain diameter. You can't have an overall length above a certain length. There's a lot
of... can you not fish a mop fly?
You can fish them up.
Okay.
Yeah, good. You can fish them up.
I'd be fucked otherwise.
No, you can't fish a squirmy. No squirmy.
No squirmy. Oh, man. I'm done.
No silicon squirmies. You can use chenille ones.
I'm back in.
Just don't tell anybody.
Back in the hunt.
Yeah. Back in.
So then at the end of it, like, is, like, if we all, obviously we're going to go down and, you know, want to see what's going on, and because it's so close. But
yeah.
So there's a final, that is that all private to just competitors?
No. Big closing ceremony. They'll have it somewhere public so everybody can come.
Cool.
And, you know, get the anthems played, the medals.
Do we know the dates and all that?
Yeah, the dates are on the FIPS website. I think it's something
we'll find it. We'll post
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's like,
out there.
It's around about the 12th, I think, of September it starts.
Cool.
Around about 5 days it runs for. So,
yeah. I'll clear my calendar. Sure.
So you need to come down. Yeah. Need you guys on the bank pointing rising fish out to me, which is completely illegal. And
now we're over here.
Just go like that. Yeah. Don't shout at me.
You're getting ready for it now, though, aren't you?
I'm prepping.
Time flies for it now.
Yeah.
Years are off the time.
I've done a little bit of practice while I've been here. I went to one of the venues the other day, which was really cool. Enjoyed that. So yeah.
So Howard, I've got a question for you, and I kind of briefly asked you this beforehand. I was thinking about, you know, I asked Howard if there's anything he's been pissed off about that he could talk about. And I was like, well, have you seen any bad river etiquette that always gets people fired up? And he goes, oh, loads of it. And then it kind of hit me. I'm like, well, do you fish better angry? Because I know in name a different sport, there's theoretically a mindset that's best for it. Like guys in the NFL, there's big outcry for about a week because they banned smelling salts, which, you know what smelling salts are?
Of course.
Yeah, Kelly knows. It's basically, I think it's ammonia is the dominant chemical in there, and you sniff that thing and it brings you back. I mean, if you've had too many beers, you'll be awake real quick. So you put
you're
smelling salt under
drunk.
You.
Don't worry.
What's that?
You're still drunk.
Yeah, you're still drunk, but you're awake again.
Watch those idiots.
So, you know, I think, like, you know, football, people want to be as jacked up and have as much adrenaline in their system as possible. Golf, I think, is the opposite, right? It's you want to be as calm as possible and kind of, you know, of level head and not let adrenaline get to you. So I guess the question is, you know, do you feel a lot of adrenaline during these competitions, and what is your best kind of mental headspace to be in?
Yeah, so there is a lot of adrenaline. It's an exciting thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, fly fishing in general is perceived as quite a relaxing, you know, pastime to some degree. You know, but the competition fishing, there is adrenaline because it's an event, it's a competition. You want to perform, you know, and when you're catching a lot of fish and it's going well and they're hitting the net and you're not missing many fish and the hook's going in, you're landing them all, and you know, there's a lot of adrenaline. For me personally, traditionally, I've always fished a little better when I'm angry, which is quite easy because I've got this reputation of being, you know, quite an angry person, or at least I look angry a lot of the time, even when I'm not. Can't help it. It's just the way my face is.
You know what they call that?
But,
RBF?
No.
Resting bitch face.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds good, right?
But it's quite useful. It intimidates people sometimes.
So you get anger is almost a tool at times.
When I get angry is when I don't do as well as I know I should have done, and then, you know, it just becomes a point to prove, and that's why. To be honest, over my entire competitive career, that's what's really dragged me through. A lot of times is when it's been hard and I'm having a howler and it's not going well. I just never ever give in ever,
yeah.
And it's more times than I can remember, it's just got me over the line, you know. And, you know, the year I was lucky enough to win it, that's what did it, you know. I was in the zone, and, you know, so yeah, for me, I always fish a little bit better when I'm just a little bit. But I have been angry a few times this trip as well.
People high-holing your wife.
It wasn't me. It was when there was a guy, I was fishing $3 with Lucy.
Lucy's his wife.
Guy walked
the queen.
In. That's it, the queen. A guy walked in 12 yards above. You know, just plowed straight out into the river and started smashing around in the water she was going to. So I have to admit, I did act badly.
Good. Did you float him? That would be nice.
I I high hauled him and obliterated the river in front of me. I was fishing angry, so it was me again. So he left quite quickly. Oh, I wouldn't have been bothered if he wasn't proficient, but he knew what he was doing. He could fish. He had all the gear, he could fish. It wasn't a beginner. You know, if it was a beginner,
yeah,
fine. It's like, you know, people don't know sometimes, but he knew what he was doing. And I think he clocked her and thought, And just thought,
made an immediate judgment.
Yeah. She's not going to catch, I'm going to get in there. You know, and she was doing really well. She was catching fish. You know, so, yeah, my bad. I probably shouldn't have done that. But.
No, you should have. A good swimming doesn't hurt many people.
No.
I have a hard time giving too many people this out that they're new, or there's just nobody that doesn't. It doesn't. To me, it doesn't seem like anymore you should ever have to think that that's close. But it depends on where they're from too. If you're from out east and they're used to fishing shoulder to shoulder,
yeah, that's a point.
It's just what it is.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it is.
And
you're right.
And they get really close. I get here and I just walk up and ask them, "You think that's a little close? I mean, do you need my help? It's, what's up?"
Yeah.
You know, and this, I try not, and every once in a while I'll get somebody that very infrequently or somewhat combative, but it's like, whoa, really? And then I have people come in the shot, not once this year. Before that, it was pretty regular for a while where guys come in and say, "Listen, this guy just jumped my shit." And I go, "Well, what do you mean?" He goes, "Well, you know, I walked out and started fishing." I said, by him, and I said, "Well, how, we're above him, below him, which way was he going?" He goes, "I don't know, he's in the river. What, you know, what did I do?" And very, very honestly,
yeah,
right?
I don't know.
The one guy went down and found the son of a bitch and went out and apologized to him. Came back and told me. He said, "I went down and told that guy, really sorry." And he said, had no idea. He just said, he just walked out and started fishing. Because the guy was there, and they're at $3, crazy. It's not like there's a limited. No, they're rentals, excuse me. They're right there in that, right by the parking area, right?
Yeah.
And he did, and he had no idea what high hole, low hole means. He meant no nothing.
Yeah.
He just was totally clueless.
Yeah.
But once you see somebody that walk, that person almost always shows their hand when they unwind that line.
Yeah,
start waving.
Things start going around, and you're going, "Well, okay, I'll move out for safety's sake. I'll move myself.
I'll get away 30 yards away."
My favorite is the chest pointing at the river while looking back at the tree that the fly's in and just pulling on it.
God.
Luckily, there's not many trees. But,
It's a slightly different thing at home with the high hole and low hole and thing. So where we fish a lot, the Eden system, pretty much when we go fishing, we pull up in the parking lot and there is any other car there for an angler, we just drive off. Because we don't have the pressure that you guys have got, and we just walk away and go somewhere else.
In Michigan, or for here too, this is the most used river in Montana.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, and when you, I hate to be the old guy that feels good about something, because it's not very much like me, but if you consider how little you get high hole, low hole in this river for the number of people that are on the summer beach, I mean, you would think we would have a first aid station at the bottom of that from people getting their ass kicked. I mean, you pull up to $3 and there's 70 cars.
Yeah,
I mean, people in every one of them.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun people,
it's
right?
Ridiculous.
But if you go creek fishing or just any one of the hundreds of thousands of rivers in the state, or back where I lived in Michigan, I had the same reel. I'd pull up to some river, whatever it was, and it's, if there's a car there, it's like, "Oh shit," and I'll go up to the I'll just go to the next place and get in, and nobody there.
Yeah.
But that being physically impossible here. They have a thing called the rule, it's in the regulations, it's still in there, it's a joke. It says try to use the rule of visual impact.
Oh, I saw that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good luck on this river, because you're driving to freaking Ennis.
So, Al, when was the last time you fished pissed off?
Probably this morning.
Yeah. Just because. Al wakes up pissed off.
No, I've hurt my shoulder. I've done a rotator cuff injury, and I get about half an hour in, and it starts to ache, and I just get annoyed.
Just angry. Yeah.
And then my eyes aren't as good as used to be, so then when I've got to thread a fly, I get annoyed at that as well, because I've got to get glasses on.
God, I wish we had a mic on you for that.
Yeah.
You don't need a mic, you can hear it. You can hear it down the river.
Did you guys ever put any of those videos out when you guys were here in the spring? I know Jake and Peter were taking a bunch of videos of Al's commenting. Got
Al's wee tips.
They're the funniest.
They are coming, I think.
Coming soon.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
My footage from that day sucked because I'm just laughing my ass off while trying to film you guys.
I think they're coming soon.
I think they are coming. Okay. Yeah. Al does a good commentary.
Yeah, we'll have to share those when they come out. They're really funny.
Al gets angry when we fish together sometimes because I don't let him stop for lunch. Mm. Oh, just got a fish.
The last competition, I fished a competition with him once, didn't I?
Yeah, that's 30 years ago.
Many years ago. I don't competition fish. I stopped for my lunch.
No.
And he's like, what the? You can fish? I said, oh, my lunch.
It was a competition.
I know.
We won, didn't we?
Still got to eat.
We did win, didn't we?
And I ate my lunch.
Not while he was watching.
No. There we go.
Yeah, we won.
I'd have a problem with that too.
He was sick on the way home, if I remember rightly.
You're driving.
It was the beer he drank at lunch as well. That's what it was.
What?
It was the beer he drank.
Al? At lunch.
No.
Surely no.
I don't buy it. These guys have come by the fly shop like 6 times in the last week. Who wants a beer? 10,000 we have in our truck.
We've given a lot of stuff away this week. Herdy hats,
so you've been doing what? What have you been doing while you're here?
We've been doing some grassroots marketing for the company. So we've been out, we've been talking to anglers, we've been giving a few free hats away, some koozies, people coming off the water, give them a cold beer, just being out there. And
some countries might consider that bribery. Where,
Maybe
I would like to make this clear.
I'm going to call Team Spain, see if they're doing it.
Yeah. And all the other international teams, I am very open to bribery. Yeah. Coors Light works great.
That's as far as it goes.
We've just been getting the word out a little bit. That,
and you went to some shops and did some stuff.
Yeah, we've done some shop too. We've done some shop events. We were up at Anglers West last night, and been a few other places as well. We've got another one coming up.
Some barbecue tomorrow.
Tomorrow. We're in Craig tomorrow.
Some barbecues over there and stuff like that.
Some barbecue in and just really be more visible over in the US.
Yeah. The West Coast needs some visibility.
Yeah.
And I forgot our reel to bring and show too.
I've not even seen that yet.
You haven't?
No.
I think it's on the desk over there. Yeah. One of them is.
They might both do. I don't know. Yeah. I don't think so. I was going to go fishing, but I might have forgotten.
I've seen it on paper. I've not seen it in physical.
You'll fix that clicker thing.
Oh, yeah. We'll do that.
It doesn't bother me, but
no,
it's good how it is. But I like the outgoing.
Yeah, we'll put that in.
So.
Yeah, you guys want to talk about this at all? I think we've alluded to it in the past.
What, the reel?
Yeah.
We talked about it, didn't we, last time?
Not really.
Well, I hadn't signed my contract.
Yeah.
So. I still haven't. But I got my reel with my name on it, so I don't give a shit.
Well, you know, as long as you're thinking of signing it, it's fine. Talk about it.
Yes. So we're doing, then potentially working together on some rods down the road too, but that's not part. We can do that later, but
yeah,
it'll be cool. But it will be the coolest streamer reel in history. So
just to put it in English, Kelly is co-designing a reel with Hardy?
Pretty much. We've taken Kelly's input, obviously, on what he wants in a streamer reel. And we've made it into reality.
Yeah, I think there's very few changes. We had the design and what I wanted. And then the first round came pretty close. And second round was pretty much dialed. And this one's like, ooh.
Good.
Bingo. Good. Yeah.
That's good.
So
that'll be coming at some point, obviously.
We'll do a release on it. Once we know that it can, it'll be there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the first streamer reel. You know, we've had everything told you that before, that just nobody ever made something. We did everything else. Shit, we got a Euro reel.
Yeah.
What the hell? Why wouldn't you have everything else and just by design? And it doesn't mean you can't use it for other stuff, but
no.
It'll be the first one ever, but it'll be sweet.
Yeah.
But while you were here, that wasn't a plug for that stuff. It was, so you guys are going around and then you leave Monday?
We're out Monday. I've been here 6 weeks, so I've got to go home before Lucy leaves me.
Lucy wasn't too happy about you leaving, making her go home.
She was not happy.
We had dinner and Lucy had some really unique insights to Howard. She said that he'll tell her that she needs to get to wifing. I'm like, wow. She'll tell me. You need to get to wifing. She can't go play. She's got wifing to do. It's my favorite line in history. Holy shit. Luckily, there's not a lot of feminists that are going to be listening.
No,
statistically,
she takes it so well.
Maybe.
Lucy's a listener?
Yeah, she just takes it. She just takes it for what it is.
We're not going to tell the world that she likes Braden's gravelly voice.
Gravelly voice.
What the hell is that?
Howard already told me that.
Oh, God. It was just,
secrets out.
If it wasn't her speaking, because you're just hypnotized when she talks. She's beautiful. And she's got this voice, and you're like, okay, whatever you say, Queen. I believe you. And it's like, yeah. Oh, my God. Even Mel said, oh, my God, I could just sit and listen to her. And now I'm like, hypnotized. Drool around. Have I been locked like this for an hour? What
did you say? All right, so next question.
Get to wifing. My friend, I don't know that.
Oh, she loves me for me sense of humor. It's definitely nothing else.
All right, here comes a question from BlueJacket645 on YouTube. He said, Howard, might you discuss the fin-to-win mantra that's so popular in the Euro world? I seem to remember watching your podcast on fishing upstream. You spoke of a leader diameter of 0.018. Do you have recommendations for varying conditions? For instance, if you fish a dry dropper with a Euro rod, what diameter leader would you tend to us?
Yeah,
I think is what he meant.
Yeah, so the fin-to-win thing comes from, it, originally it was put on flies, so it was like all the Euro flies are thin in profile. It doesn't really mean that. It means we typically try and fish as light as is practically possible. Aside to that, you have to fish to the conditions. I can't fish here with what I fish with at home because the water's too heavy, fish are too big on average, and they're just too hot when you hook them. You end up breaking off all the time. So for somebody who's starting off, the best thing to do is start heavy and work progressively thinner and
build. In terms of your tippet diameters. So what are we talking in terms of like the X system?
So we go off diameter. So usually main leaders, I'll fish anything. The heaviest I'll fish on main leader is about 0.24, which I think is about 8 pound breaking strain, 8-9 pound breaking strain, something like that. That's for the main level nymphing leader.
3 or 4x?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. And then I'll fish a lighter tippet section. So if I get stuck and I break, I just lose the tippet. When I'm fishing to the limit of my ability and the conditions are correct for it, my main leader will be 0.12 and my tippet will be 0.10, 0.8. So that's like, the tippet's like 7x, 7-8x, and then the main leader's just one notch up. But that's in like, I'm trying to steal like little incremental improvements. The last thing anybody should do is charge out to a river like this and start fishing that light because it won't work. You'll end up just constantly getting smashed and you'll leave gear everywhere and it's just not the right thing to do. But the thin to win thing, and I've said it a few times in articles I've written and stuff where I've said, for me personally, anything between me and the fly is, I class it as interference. So it's interference to the drift. So that's, thick line. Some people put swivels in the Euro rigs. That's just, for me, that just sends me cold. Because it's just like, it's weight. It's like, I try and take everything out and have it as light as possible. So that all I'm doing really is, getting as good a drift as physically possible with the fly on the end. And if that leader's lighter, if that whole back end's lighter, you don't need as much fly weight to offset it. so you can fish a lighter fly and get a better drift. So everything becomes better when you fish lighter, but you have to be sensible with it. You know, and even to the point of, like, when you're catching a lot of fish sometimes and they're not that discriminating, I go a bit heavier so that I have less tangle time, less re-rigging time. You know, my leader, when it's catching rocks, I'm not worried about it rubbing through and becoming...
Yeah, the abrasion.
Yeah, so...
And you land them quicker too.
Yeah, you play them harder, you know. So it's a scale, you know. And when fishing for small fish in a really tricky situation. And the other thing is when I fish very, very light, it gives me a mental advantage. You know, I often think when I'm fishing a 0-12 level leader and an 8 or a 10 tippet, I'm usually pretty confident that a lot of the people around me aren't doing that. You know what I'm thinking? And that just, even if it doesn't make any difference, it makes a difference to me. So.
All right, let's do a question from, this was, I can't remember his full Instagram name. It's hyperventilating for something. It's something funny. I'll find it. But said some compliments about the podcast. And he said, if possible, could you have a segment to discuss carrying your streamers during a day on the water? More importantly, how to care for them once you're done for the day and ready to be stored until the next outing. And he gave Johnny a shout out for the mini kill whitey, which... That's an money. Incredible bug. If I don't know if you guys have ever fished that bug.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. And I did.
Yeah.
It is that. A hell of a streamer.
The yellow one.
That's it swings, it strips.
Yeah.
Clobbered.
It does everything. It's my best big swing fly. I've thrown a ton of Kelly's bugs. It's the right size where it's easy to turn over. I mean, I love that flathead kitty on a spay rod, but it's hard to throw. I really have to be dialed to actually get it to go. That mini kill whitey's a really, really good size for that. So my opinion, there's two things I do. One, I've got a fish pond boat bag. It's got Velcro on the top of it. And I normally carry a puck for wet flies. And I put my, just like you separate your laundry, right? I put my whites somewhere. I put my darks somewhere. And then yellows go on their own. Sometimes I put them on my hat to dry them out before I put them back in the box. And then that Cliff foam patch is a great, I've got one sitting on the dash of my car. So I get back, I put all my wet bugs out there. Something about the sun on the glass and being in a black car, which is basically an oven, dries them out pretty fast. If you don't take them off, they lose all their color. But I'm curious, you know, what you guys do for, you know, I don't really nymph that much. So I'm curious, you know, how often you dry flies out in the nymph world.
Yeah, well, they don't carry a lot of water, you know, especially perdigons. You know, they don't carry any.
Not a lot of bleeding between those.
No, not a lot of color bleeding. It's all covered.
No, they're pretty much sealed in.
Yeah.
All I do is I'm less worried about the fly being, I'm more worried about the hook and the hook point. So I stick things in the front of my box when I'm fishing. And then the only thing I do is keep a close eye on the hook point. You know, I'll sometimes sharpen them, something you never really see anybody doing these days. But I just carry a hook horn and it's actually on the back of my snips.
Nice.
So it's when I clip the tag end, it becomes second nature to wipe it, you know, so that's why I stuck it there, because I'd do it then. If it was hanging off something else, I wouldn't do it. So yeah, that's the only thing I really watch. CDCs and all that kind of stuff, dry flies, obviously, stick them out to let them, you know,
dry out
and all that kind of stuff. But streamer-wise, you know, Kelly's, whatever Kelly does is probably the way to do it.
Quail? Didn't some guy make you a box one time?
No, streamer box. I asked the guy to make me, he was at streamer school.
Yeah.
And I said, what I really need is a box that I can dry my flies in. It had a fan in it. And he went home and he had a 3D printer and he made me one with a solar panel on it.
Yeah.
And it worked.
It charges the fan and the fly. Yeah. Fan. That's
and then
really
it's
cool.
Aired out on one end. It's got a fan that blows through it, but... I could get like two flies in it. So, but it was, I do obviously what you do because you did it. What I did. I bet.
Turns out I've learned something from Kelly.
I did it. He's talking about walk weighting, wasn't he?
Yep.
Yeah. I carried two or three boxes. You know, we tried to figure out what my box storage is. It's like 6,000 in my boat.
Yeah,
6,000 flies or some shit. So I tried to cull that down, but I designed my boat to be a storage unit, and that everything goes on the top and the carpet or seafoam, whatever you want to put on your top of your box. But it just, it's really not that critical on most colors. It's just critical on greens and whites for the most part.
Yellow is the other one I'd add in.
Well, yellow doesn't do anything. It just bleeds into the other ones. So yeah, if you get a green fly, green and white is such a common color that you just separate that stuff instantly. Otherwise, you got a green and yellow fly, and you will have it just like that. Mm-hmm. But the other thing you can do is you can take any green and white, like a Barely Legal is one of our most popular flies. You just get it wet and put it down on a rag, you know, separate the colors. It only happens once.
Yeah.
But if you set it in your box next to a white, whatever, any olive will, or black will bleed into the other fly. Mm-hmm. But it's just, I mean, I have always preached having a drying box because I change flies so fast, I need to see my color rotation. Mm-hmm. So I see it, and I just put them on that drying stuff. And if I'm walk waiting, I carry a drying box that is solely for, I put it in that box, and I see my colors as I go my rotation. And that, but its in purpose is to just dry the flies. And that's, but again, it's just, it's two colors you got to worry about,
right?
Green and black, which white doesn't, you don't have to worry about it bleeding. You just need to be
worried about something it bled next on. To it. Yeah.
And then you've got, but that, you know, our probably number two or three selling fly ever here has been Barely Legal. And I don't think I, that first 5 years, I don't think I have any of them that aren't yellow. I mean, it's like shit, you know, put it in there and completely just like, I'll get it in a minute. You know, nothing happens when you get it in a minute.
Yeah.
You get back and you got a yellow belly fly. But it doesn't seem to bother it too much. But it's
no, that one still fishes pretty well.
It doesn't bother it too much, but it pisses you off.
Yeah.
So I'd say the other things that
Can also, some people go to the point if they tie themselves, they pre-wash their marabou.
Yeah.
If you're, I'm sure Andy Sabota would be the guy who did that or invented it.
It takes a lot of preparation to do that.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
He's such a dork. But he probably invented it. I don't know. But yeah. So but it's really critical to have the drying. And you know, and to Howard's point, I don't remember last time I saw a hook coat. I never, you've always seen my, in my gear bag, I've got my Diddy bag for just streamers.
Diddy bag?
Combs, huh? Diddy bag, yeah.
I think you want to change the name of that now. Recent events.
Is that a bad thing? Is it cool?
No.
Is this something?
Diddy bag is not a good thing.
No, even I get that one. Yeah.
It's really not a bag either, it's a box. So it's a Diddy box? No, that could be worse.
Yeah.
But, you know, hook hone, and you got scissors, and you got your comb. And you've got really short wire cutters. Always, you should, if you fish streamers, you don't run wire cutters, you are an idiot. Because you are going to wear one. And when you wear one in your hat and you can't
get your hat
pin it to your head.
When you, oh God, I've done it twice for, and you go to Europe. And also the other thing I carry in there is, because I fish alone 90% of the time, I carry a mirror. And you get one in your face when you look this and you're going, son of a bitch, which way is it going in?
Oh, don't.
Well, then you really want them little nippers if you're not going to pull it. Because you want to cut the rest of that son of a bitch off, so you just got the hook in you. But I carry one of them little compact mirrors. Saved my ass, man. I had one drilled in my face right here. It was actually on this side, I think.
So you carry a comb and a small mirror?
A comb, small mirror.
Get the makeup with you, too? Or
probably. Just a little rouge. Or whatever you call it. Get your cheeks, you know, so that chick goes by in the boat.
So another... I guess
but
tool.
The hook cone was what was getting there.
Oh, yeah.
Have not seen anybody, never seen anybody hook, you know, like Howard does. Obviously, it's important.
A couple of us carry them. I've got one on my nippers.
Well, I mean us. I'm just talking about.
Yeah, but outside of us,
I mean, what do we sell?
Jam a streamer.
Two a year?
Yeah, not many. That's jam crazy. A streamer into a rock and then look at the hook.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It is put bent
it in
over.
Put it in a stick.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that, you know, you can barely feel it. Yeah, I mean, but you can feel it. Mm-hmm. And if you can feel it, you know, we talk about this all the time. You get one chance.
I get a lot of messages and stuff, people saying, what hook do you use for this? What hook do you use for that? I'm losing a lot of fish off.
Yeah.
And I bet not one of them actually sharpens the hook they've got on.
Or even look at them.
No.
You know, catch 10 fish.
That's more relevant.
Even a fish, you know, good jaw. And you come in and you can see that micro just a, it's just not there.
It's no longer one atom at the end. It's like,
yeah, four. And it's like, poof, yeah, it's over. You just, it's that easy.
It's enough to bump a fish.
Yeah. And then that's what I was getting at. The, with streamers, if you're truly hunting, you're going to get, if you are the best ever living being that ever was, you might get two or three shots at a giant a year if you fish 200 days a year. You're going to get lots of them pissant 22, 4, 6s. But when you see a 30 roll and your hook's bent or something's wrong and it's on you, it's like, good luck. Mm. Karma's going to bite your ass for 10 more years because you're not going to see another one. And it was your fault.
I always think about Chris's fish that he got this spring, the 32 but brown trout. Giant fish. Chris has fished harder than 99.8% of anglers for the last decade plus. Mm-hmm. And when he saw that fish roll, he said it was by far the biggest fish he's ever seen. And it was barely over the 30 mark.
Yeah.
And this dude hunts them. I mean, more than...
He goes all over, just all he does.
All over.
He just fishes, yeah, just and so by himself.
There's your odds.
Really great. I mean, it's just, why would you, obviously from Howard's perspective, he's, every fish counts.
Yeah.
I mean, is there a stat on what the average win is? By what? Like five fish, two fish? Is it five fish by inch, by...
No, I mean, it can be incredibly tight. I mean, the only one I can really remember, because obviously it affected me the most, was the year I was lucky to win it. Me and David Ferreras Garcia from Spain were drawn on placing points, and I beat him by three fish, and that's three fish over 5 days. So fishing for 4 hours a day for 5 days, it was a three fish margin. So it was nothing.
Yeah,
they had to do two kickbacks to separate us.
The average bass back in the day, when a stat I saw once was 5 days of fishing, it's 13 ounces separation.
Same deal.
Yeah, and so a dull hook is you're 6 ounces or whatever.
It's an important
it's
thing
that, it's
after,
that,
yeah.
It's because...
Check your leader, run your fingers down it, make sure
becomes,
it's not...
It becomes, I mean, for us, it's just your life. You just do it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't just tie, you tie things on and everything gets run through and it's touched and it's like, you don't have to sit there and do this or you just, like you said, you run your hook. You hit something in that river or the streamer, you run your hook. It's amazing sometimes to see, like in Rock, in this river, shit, it'll have an elf shoe in the end of it. Yeah. Some bitch be bent over like that. And you're just like this, you hit on it, it wasn't a fish at all, it was a rock, and you don't check your hook. Like,
if you do bury that hook, he's never coming off.
No, he's got it two different ways. But
yeah, two barbs but it, yeah, there.
Two different ways if you can get it through, but
yeah,
it just doesn't. Things that, you know, the difference between pro jocks and average is, it's like any sport in the world, it becomes second nature, where you just, you don't, and people ask you, and you're like, oh yeah, I do that, or no, I never done that. It's like dumb, right? But yeah, it's like, you just do it, and you, like to watching tying a fly on and stuff, when you're talking to people, and it's like, and you're talking to them, or is it study, five turns or three turns, it's all irrelevant. It becomes second nature, and hook sharpening is falling from, you know, when it fell from grace for us was when we went to chemically sharpened hooks.
Okay.
And everybody, because you went from the mustads, you know, the bigger gouge, the barbs, and the hooks were much bigger, right?
Yeah.
And they just, no matter what, weren't as sharp. There's just more metal to it, and it's harder to go. But we sharpened everything in the old days.
Yeah.
And I was still at guiding shit. I mean, and we're bottom bouncing a ton. I'd see somebody set up, like, ooh, let me see that fly. Boom, boom. And it's right here. It never came off. Like, it's all day, right?
It's seconds. Seconds to do it.
Yeah. That's
it.
And
so I've got a question for you all, but it kind of starts with a quick story from Chris, who I remember he's the one who told me this story, and he's the one who heard the question. But we're talking about how when you hear a question from, you know, kind of a true beginner who doesn't really know anything about fishing, it ends up being something that you've never thought about before. And the question that Chris heard is, you know, he's kind of explaining to somebody how to tie a knot onto a dry fly. And they said, well, which way do I thread it? Do I thread it from the hook side or from the back side? Chris is like, never thought about that once in my entire life. You know, he's been fishing his entire life. So have there been any questions any of you have gotten that kind of, you know, brought you back to the very beginning with, huh, never really thought about that before?
That would be one.
Yeah.
I always went through the top of the hook just because I'm looking down.
Yeah. It's fine.
But I have thought about it. Like,
I just go whichever way I pick it up.
Yeah, I'll go through whichever way you can see.
On dry flies, I usually go up because I always think
you know why that is, though, don't you? Because I said I always go through from the top. And this is what he does. This is how it starts. This is all how all the arguments start. Well, I go the other way. I mean, we all do that in Scotland. That's what I get. That's my life every day.
Yeah.
That's something I'm pissed off about. That's constant.
Do you do loops? That's a big question.
So we're not allowed to use loops in the world.
Really?
No, it's got to be... Well, there's a... It depends how you read the rule, but the general consensus is that you can't have a loop on there to attach the fly. Yeah. Not to say some countries don't put loops on them, because I do know that some of them do, but you're not supposed to, I don't think. Hmm. So I do sometimes when I'm streamer fishing, but when I'm doing anything else...
I don't put any emphasis on that so much as far as the... I do loops if I'm locked in. Certain areas, rocky areas, just it's a better chance than that. If I hit one, it doesn't pop it off because it's just maybe it's flopped over to one side. Mm.
Yeah,
virtually no difference. But I have never. I get asked that so much. So if loop knots, and I just never saw it be that big of a deal.
No,
I don't see my fly change. The thought of it making the fly do something like so, you're static, you're pulling against it, it's under tension.
It's not saying. I would say
to Johnny or somebody once, you should, I don't know if it was Johnny, it was just, you should always come from the bottom on those. You're like, there was somebody standing up there, one of the guys at work, oh, you go that way? I did say, you shouldn't do that. Really? Yeah. And just leave it soak for a while.
By the way, I've been forgetting to mention this the last few shows. Everybody who keeps asking, where's Johnny? Johnny is a new dad and a full-time guide. Yes. So
nobody puts more hours than Johnny.
At some point, Johnny will be back on the show. We've been talking about it.
I've seen Johnny like 10 times since May.
Yes.
He's my general manager, my head guide. And he sends me texts. He gets up and reads everything, business, and is new and everything before, and usually he's on the river by 5.
Yeah.
And then gives me a complete detail at the end of the day somehow and goes home and he's dead.
You think this guy's got a fishing problem? Yeah. I mean, he watches all fishing YouTube. He reads every fishing report. Make that comment recently I asked him how it was out there. He goes, really tough. But if you read any other shop's fishing report, it is really good.
That was 2 days ago. Yeah. That was 2 days ago. And he was like, Well, these people are lying. Remember, he got really indignant. He was like, they're lying. These guys are lying. And I said, that's their business. He goes, no. He's like pissed, right? And he's like, they're lying. It sucks out there right now. And he's like, and he writes it.
Yeah.
Johnny tells the truth.
If you've come into our shop.
Sometimes I'm like, you could be a little less.
Maybe somebody did catch a fish this year. Yeah. A little less dire. The world is not drained.
You can still go out and imp one up. But yeah,
if you've come into our shop in the last week, I mean, I've been sitting in here working, and every time somebody comes in, how's it been? Our boys are honest. They go, it's been tough. You know, ants are going to be your best bet. Nymphing is your best bet if you want dry flies, ants. Might get one to look at a hopper, a lot of these.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's when I was with Jerry. I says, I'll give you 4 hours of dry only. We're going to roll 4 hours, but if you want that stick bent, we're going to take that off. Anyway, I said, we're going to get a shit ton of these. Yeah. You know, every 5-inch fish or below ate that thing all day.
I got 3 fish that totaled 9 inches last night.
That's about normal. Yeah. And we dropped
one of them
dropped a 3-0 Pertagon underneath his ant. We didn't go 10 feet.
Ta-da!
And it was like, there you go. But it still wasn't. I was up, I told you I was getting my ass kicked when I was up there this afternoon.
Yeah.
Until I saw that caddis thing. And you know, 20 minutes at least, I didn't have an eat. And you know, I'm sitting there going, if they aren't eating a Perdigon, and my brain started going into milk toast, right? I go, wow, if they won't eat that, and I saw that fish flash, and I go, ah, they're on caddis up higher, and put on a really old fly, and I think eight fish and eight casts.
That's right? Interesting.
And it was like, it just turned like that, and it was like, ah, okay, well, they'll still do other stuff, you know, and, but I just couldn't believe how pigeonholed I became that I had two purdies on and I wasn't catching fish. And my brain checked out. I got 400 patterns in my fly box. Right? And I'm like, and I just stopped and I saw that fish and I go, God, what would we have done 10 years ago? So I put on a, oh, and we also screwed up the, we had the Ryko and the Hydra Psyches backwards on Stulcup and
yes.
Oliver Edwards.
Johnny texted us.
Oh, God. He was mortified.
Within an hour.
When it was us, and we were talking about the two flies.
All right.
And I said something about it. Oh, my God, Johnny. He's the called the corrector, right? And I had Stulcup and Oliver's flies switched, right? Oh, God, help us. But anyway.
But he did it like a doctor would, yes. Where he's like, by the way, I've been loving the podcast, but you were wrong
kiss
with
my
this.
Yeah. Isn't it great? But I was up there, and I thought, well, what would you do? Wow, what would you have done before? Yeah. So immediately went into two 10-year or 15-year old flies. What do you know? One was in the upper film, up where it belonged, and cha-cha-pa-pa-cha-pa-pa.
So I'll tell you what, that's interesting. I was just up the river. I was between the lakes because we had a communication breakdown.
Yes.
Probably my fault as much as yours.
No, not your fault.
No.
I communicate with him daily.
Yeah. Yeah. Feel your pain now.
Text message. What's a text?
Yeah.
I'm going to pull this damn bitch out here in a second. That's a gun. What are we going to do now?
I was up between the lakes just fishing, and I went through a really nice slot which should have a fish in it and didn't get anything. And I was getting a little bit. And I'd been through the one before it, not had anything. I thought, it's not quite as good a place. But so I just messed around. I came up two fly weights, so two bead weights, technically. So I went a lot lighter. And I got a fish. It's one of the best eats I've had since I was here. It just came out of the thing and ate it 2 inches below the surface. I saw it on the top dropper. And that was like a 17, 18 inch rainbow.
I was running a crystal serendipity, which probably, I don't even know if we still have them. And it's just such a great little caddis thing, right?
Yeah.
And an 18. And I had another caddis, some sort underneath it. And every fish ate within 5 inches of the surface on that crystal fly. And then, I mean, but I was, it can happen to anything, streamers, dries, you know, you just get locked in and, you know, and then I started opening up fly boxes and I'd actually open one and close it. So those are all like 10 years old, right? And there's 300 of them in there. Well, maybe there's 300 flies in here because you used to fish these a lot. And I just said, well, I go backwards and it was like, holy shit. It hurt.
Yeah.
It was usually it's just the opposite. Well, not necessarily with caddis. It's usually that you're below them. But yeah, it was a hard hit. But I did, when you first came in, you said you're just above us. I was going to use that for my excuse. I thought, you son of a bitch just hoovered my runs. And I got to the top and you wouldn't go out in that white. Because I was up in that really raging shit.
Okay.
I waited out in the middle of the trees.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And I got out there and then I started thinking, God, how embarrassing would it be? Because I was going back, my foot got wedged. And it was my downstream foot got wedged between that. I slid on one of the moss rocks. Shit's raging out there. It's not that deep, right? I'm thinking, now, if I get wedged and I know my leg's going to break, and do I get on my cell phone and write Mel and say, I probably won't be for dinner? Or do I write to Howard? Howard, I'm going to miss the podcast. Because I'm going to be dead up here. And I said, holy shit. I was just... But right in that raging stuff, oh my God, there must have been some of those pools, 6-7 fish in a pool, just, they're all pissy, it's 12-14 inches, but I mean, it was pretty cool doing getting back. Then I had all these visions of me stuck there, breaking my rod and trying to breathe out of the rod and shit. Well, my body's popping and hoping somebody comes up.
Where's Kelly? I don't know, we walked away from the shop about an hour ago.
Yes.
All right, let's wrap this episode up. Let's do band of the week, and then I think you've got some new stuff behind that desk you want to show off. Yeah.
We got a lot of stuff this week. Go.
Band of the week.
Al.
Since it's your first time, it doesn't matter.
What's the 7 o'clock one we had on?
That's his.
That's my one of his. Because I've never really heard it. What was it?
It was Stranglehold.
Stranglehold.
We've got Stranglehold now.
That's
on
the first
in
thing
the
I've heard it when, in the car with him. So oh, yeah. That's my one.
All right. We kiss ass.
Yeah. I'll,
I'm gonna go.
It's good though.
Charlie Crockett.
Have I done Charlie Daniels yet? I did Marshall Tucker, I think.
I don't think you've done Charlie Daniels. No, I don't think so.
Good, there you go. What was yours?
Yeah, same says. But although we've been listening to Van Halen quite a bit while I've been driving as well.
Nice. That feels like it's up your alley.
Big Van Halen guy? I thought I'd already used it.
You might have.
Eruption. You I'm sure did. I did.
Yeah, you did.
Yes. I say while we've been driving, but I've done all the driving.
Good
and Alistair's been conscious for some time.
Big napper, are you?
I had a good nap.
You had a good nap last night.
Last night.
Yeah.
All right, what do you got behind the desk you want to show off?
I've been messing with it. The guy, this is, what was the gal's name? This is the gal, isn't this the gal that sent me the 27-incher?
No, I have no idea.
Oh, shit.
I don't think I was here for that.
Okay, hold on. Well, I'll tell you who it is, because I took his, he's a Stephen, was it Vasek? Vasek.
Vasectomy. Yeah,
Stephen. Yeah, Vasek. I can't say that to him. The conservation officer, so he sent me these Illinois conservation things. I have to move this one because it's hiding my airborne. And well, I'm moving it over here, but that's where it will be, not like that. But I had, this is my favorite part of it. I'm pretty certain it was his daughter that got the 27 after watching the video.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So he sent me this, and I've been flipping it the whole time, right? This is you guys tonight when you leave. This is, you win. It's a conservation thing. And all I can think of is he's a warden. And it's get out of jail free. The other one says go directly to jail. I can just see Steve sitting there going, that's the best you've got, huh? Sorry, dumbass.
It's like
go directly to jail. And then on the edge, in true American fashion, not valid in Illinois. It's in Illinois.
You're going to get sued.
But this is cool as shit, so I can't wait. This could come in with the fireable offenses when I'm looking at one of them going,
Okay, so have you ever seen No Country for Old Men?
Oh, yeah.
It's great movie. It's one of the greatest psychopaths that's ever been played on camera. And he goes into the gas station, you know, when he's blasting people with the cattle, the pressurized air. Yeah. And he goes in, he flips a coin and looks at the guy and goes, what's the most you've ever lost on a coin toss?
Yeah.
And then looks at it and says, get home safe or something. That's going to be Kelly behind the counter now.
Just be flipping this thing for days and days.
Look out, Will, Kyler, Chuck, Jake. You guys are screwed. Awesome. All right, well, that was episode 40. Thanks, gentlemen, for stopping by.
No problem. It's good. Thanks for having us again.
And thanks for listening. See you next week.
See you next week.
Cool.
Bingo.
Cool.
Wasn't that fun?